Welcome to the Wealth Under Pressure podcast. Financial success very often has less to do with owning a financial product, earning a high income, or even being frugal. Instead, the path to success comes from having a comprehensive plan that enables you to optimize decisions and avoid mistakes. Join John Smallwood, a certified financial planner, as he identifies key areas of pressure on people's wealth and strategizes to reduce it. It's time to liberate your wealth.
Hello and welcome to another podcast with John Smallwood. Today, John is going to talk about how retirement isn't what it used to be. There are a lot of pressures that we see coming down the pipeline that need to be addressed. And luckily, John is a specialist in helping really deal with those pressures. And heck, it's the name of the podcast, right? So, John, let's jump right in.
Thank you, Matt. As we always discuss, this is about identifying potential pressure that it could, might, probably will, should have, could have, would have, all those things, all those terminologies that are going to change the outcomes in your plan. And anybody that knows me and has listened to me through the podcast or seminars or anything to that nature, when you think about the variables of a financial plan, if you change one variable, you get a different outcome. If you change two or three variables, it's not even the same plan. And my goal in today's podcast is to get you thinking strategically about four or five variables that could all be fluctuating and changing that could, not will, could have a dramatic impact on your bottom line. So the goal of financial planning and our process is to continually focus on reducing taxes today and in the future, constantly focus on reducing risk, reducing fees and costs, helping you increase the savings rate, helping you increase protection and benefits around that wealth, generating a higher retirement income, and passing more to your family. Okay. Those are the seven variables that we always want to, when you're going to implement or talk to a financial advisor about a financial strategy, if it, you know, which of the seven in that list, Matt, are you not interested in?
That's a loaded question, John, because I'm interested in all of those. I mean, those are all major concerns.
All right. So should I cross off, like, do you want more risk? You want to pay more fees? You want to save less? Yeah. Like, I know it's a loaded question.
Yeah, but it is a loaded question. Yeah.
But the reality is most people are doing the exact opposite. Okay. And it's setting them up into their retirement where they're going to achieve the opposite of what they want to achieve. And now, regardless of where you are in your financial planning timeline, now is the time to understand what those pressures are. And today, I want to just talk about what we're seeing and what the industry is telling us of what's going on as far as active retirees. So if you're 15 years from retirement or 20 years from retirement or 10 years from retirement or just retired, or 5 years into retirement, these are things that you need to be aware of that could impact your financial strategy. So if you think back for a second, when I started in the industry in the late 80s, early 90s, I was doing seminars at corporate workplaces on financial planning. Mm-hmm. And I would tell a story about this three-legged stool. Right. And your three-legged stool of retirement income was going to be a pension from your employer, which by that time they were already declining and going away or being reduced. Mm-hmm. Social Security. Those two forms would make up about 65 to 70% of the retiree's income. And the third would be made up through personal savings. So what we see now today, as of 2010, and I believe it's actually gotten worse from this point just from seeing people, but that's, I don't have any statistics that show it, but as of 2010, the Social Security Administration came out and said that's now a five-legged stool or a five pizza pie, however you want to visualize that. Social Security is funding 36% of a client's retirement income. The next pensions are only funding 18.5%. Asset income is only funding 12.5%. The rest of it's coming from earnings. Mm. So people are working in retirement to supplement their income stream because they don't have enough income to meet their lifestyle. So it's, and we used to talk about that in those seminars. And, you know, at that time already people were, pensions are going away and how are we going to do it? And, you know, a lot of concerns. And what we're seeing is the Social Security Administration, we hit a record this year. We achieved a new feat in Social Security. You want to know?
I do. What is it? Is? Yeah. What is it?
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. So 61,859,000 Americans are collecting Social Security this year. Record amount.
Wow. 126,827,000
people are working. It's about a 2-to-1 ratio, right? Hmm. So when I was doing these seminars, it was like an 8-to-1 ratio. And a guy stands up and he said, son, and I said, yes. He said, you need to keep working because I need people working while I'm getting Social Security, because Social Security is going to be one of the biggest parts of my retirement plan at the company that I was doing this at. And I said, oh, you know, it was like, yeah, I was shocked. But what's interesting is we weren't supposed to hit the 2-to-1 ratio for another 13 years.
Oh.
So that puts pressure on the Social Security Administration, mm-hmm. on the funding, right? So if more people are collecting benefits and less people are working, that means there's less revenue coming in to fund these services, mm-hmm. these payments, right? 70% of the baby boomers will start drawing Social Security, will turn 65, let's just say, okay, between 2022 and 2029. So 5 years, you know, 4 years from now, and for the next 5 years, 6 years after that, 70% of all baby boomers will now be eligible for Social Security. That's pretty frightening.
Didn't to me. Now I have a Social Security kind of philosophical question for you. It wasn't the money that people paid in supposed to have been saved, so that money was really yours? What am I missing there? Because yeah, I get a statement. I'm sorry, John. I get a statement. I don't know what it is, quarterly, annually, whatever, that tells me how much I paid into Social Security.
Correct. And what you might expect to receive
that is correct.
In retirement.
That's right.
Right. So that, yes, there's supposed to be money set aside for that. But what we're seeing is there's an article that's out, and it was in December 27th of CNSnews.com. And basically the authors put out that using a 75-year lifespan, and this is where we're going to get into some technical stuff. People okay. are living a lot longer than the age of 75.
Yes.
Matter of fact, when Social Security came out, the average lifespan of a human being was 64.5.
Wow.
And you couldn't collect Social Security until you were 65.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So they were banking on the fact that they weren't going to pay out for a long period of time. And now people are living to what? You know, the average female will live to age 82. Mm. The average male will live to 79. That means that at that point, 50% of the people have passed away and the other 50% are still here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you think about it, this article points out that there's an unfunded liability using a 75-year lifespan for Social Security is $12.5 trillion. And the current debt of our country is $20 trillion.
Mm.
If you divide that by 153 million full-time workers, according to the article, that's about $133,000 of debt for each person, according to that article.
Okay.
Just to fund the Social Security system. Okay. So if you start thinking about, you know, years ago, we started to eliminate Social Security from a 50 and under financial plans, assuming they may not get it because there was discussions about means testing, taking it away. There's all these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
If the pressure is great on Social Security and you have assets, you could potentially see means testing. So okay. if I'm relying on it and I have too much money, I may not get it.
Hmm.
Or they might drop it. They might reduce it. They might do some sort of – who knows? But if you think about it, the baby boomers is one of the largest populations out there. And they're going to be taking as much money as they can. And if the worker ratio drops from 2 to 2.1 to, you know, to 1 down to 1 to 1,
mm-hmm.
or even different, that's going to put significant pressure that they're not going to be able to make these payments.
Sure.
Okay. And I think it's really interesting. If you look at, you know, I like low taxes, but you know, if we're correcting low taxes, the deficit's rising and the debt's rising and it gets crazy. So the first pressure is, can I really rely on Social Security in my retirement plan? And the reality is, for normal people, it makes up about 36% of their retirement plan.
And in almost every financial planning software uses that as an assumption, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct. And to me, if, and this is my philosophy, right? If I remove the Social Security from the conversation and we simulate a retirement without Social Security and it works, it's going to work with Social Security. But if I simulate a retirement plan without Social Security and it doesn't work, it's now that becomes almost crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us, you know, depending upon your income need and where you are, it's an important part of it. And when you think about how much money you've actually paid into the system versus what you're going to receive back, it's a small amount of money compared to what you're putting in, right?
Sure.
So you have to understand the impact of an, you know, even when you look at a lot of the financial planning softwares, what you see is a simulated increase in Social Security. And what you saw this past year is for most retirees, they did increase the Social Security did get a cost of living rise or raise, but that was wiped out by the increase in the Medicaid premium.
Mm-hmm.
Literally wiped out. Most people went negative. So, hey, we're giving you a raise, but we're increasing cost over here and you have less money. So you didn't really get a raise.
Mm.
Right? So the focal point or the conversation is, should I even use Social Security with an inflation rider on it? Is that overestimating, giving me a false sense of safety in the success of my financial plan? Variable number one, right? So run your financial plan with Social Security, with a cost of living rise, without a cost of living rise, and without Social Security, and how does the plan work?
But
if the plan works...
But you just said that's 36% of most people's retirement. I mean, how are you going to make up? I mean, that's not even the right word that I want to use. I mean, how are you going to account for a third of your retirement not being there? That's pressure. Right. That's scary, dude. I mean, we can just stop the darn podcast right here. I think you probably terrified most of our listeners at this point. But because I haven't looked at it like this. That's very eye opening.
Right. And it's. And I'm not, I don't want to be like gloom and doom, right?
Well, sure. You're being very real. That's the way I look at it.
I'm trying to be real. And here's the thing that really concerns me is that when you look at a, you know, who's listening to our podcast, who's on here, it's people that have worked for great companies. They've accumulated wealth. They might have pensions. They're successful people,
yes.
Right? And those people, when you look at the stats, it's a 50% probability that if it's a couple, husband and wife, that one of them is going to live to around age 95. Ooh. And stop and think about that for a second. If the Social Security is funding it at 75-year lifespan and a whole bunch of people live to 95, what does that do to their numbers?
Oh, it's exponentially increased.
Correct. And it's, you know, and that's the thing that we, when you start talking about withdrawal rate, right, from a portfolio, and you look at all the historical numbers that were out there, there's this magic rule of thumb that somehow comes out, and it's the William Bangen theory that a financial advisor in the 80s came out with, a 4% rule. And that's kind of like the holy grail of financial planning.
Right.
Well, life expectancy was 75 when that rule was done. So I changed the variable of longevity from 75 now out to 85, 90, 95. That destroyed that. Dr. Wade Fow, he did a piece on withdrawal rates. And what he came up with is, because of this propensity to live so long and market volatility and a whole bunch of other factors, that the real withdrawal rate is down in the 2.8 to 3% range. To make it – and that's – that's to have money last over your life expectancy. So when you think about a retirement plan and you think about the variables, right? Simplistic variables are, I have a pot of money today. I have a savings rate that's fuel that's going into the savings plan. I might have a pension. I might have a Social Security. I might be inheriting money or I might not be. Mm-hmm. All right. Those are things that you need to think about. And now I'm going to work to a certain age. Well, if I'm going to live to 95 or 100, maybe 65 is not the right number.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Maybe I need to extend that. Or the other variable is, well, what's my lifestyle? What's the burn rate that mm-hmm. I spend on a monthly basis? Is that something that I can make a modification to? And those are things that are really difficult, but you got to start thinking about this as one big, long, you know, goodwill hunting calculation on the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
With hundreds and hundreds of variables. Because here's what we don't know. You know, we don't know what the outcomes are going to be in the sequence in which they're going to come. So if you go to the next leg of this and you say pensions, how many people, raise your hands, just kidding, how many people have a pension?
Very few.
Very few, less and less. And a lot of people have these pensions that were frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing companies freeze them on a more regular basis, okay? And in lieu of, you know, instead of it, those pensions were called defined benefit plans,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you've gone to a defined contribution plan, which defined benefit basically said, you work for us, we're going to pay you a certain percentage of your salary in the future. And we have to do that. A defined contribution says, we'll put in a certain percentage of your salary and whatever it's worth is yours. So the risk was basically transferred from the company that you work for or the union that you work for or the government agency that you work for or the municipality that you work for. It was transferred from them to you, the individual. And that's a trend that I've been seeing for 28 years in the industry, is that the risk – basically, if you remember one of the earlier podcasts, when we talked about the five rules of the institutions, and that was geared towards institutions.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about from the government standpoint and the municipalities and the pensions and the corporations, they're basically saying we need to take the risk away from ourselves and put it onto our employees. And they'll mm-hmm. like it because they'll get the money up front and it'll be in an account and it'll look good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. And there's a, you know, so. Not getting off on a tangent here, but you start thinking about pensions and what's out there in the economy. And there was a great article recently about some of the corporate pension plans and what's going on. And in the Congressional Budget Act that was recently passed in February, there was an article in Forbes that basically said, oh, there's a 16-member committee that's been appointed to with the sole purpose of figuring out how to bail out the 200 largest pension plans, which are supposedly multi-employer pension plans, which are supposedly $365 billion underfunded.
Mm.
So if that makes up 18% of your income and your pension has a problem, and you're seeing this all over the place, mm-hmm. Teamsters unions and cities and people reduce – pensions are getting reduced 5 years into retirement, 10 years into retirement because they can't meet the obligations, right? So one of the articles about GE, have you seen that one?
I have not. No.
All right. So I don't have the exact numbers, but the article was in, it basically talked about this. GE has 559,000 people living, active retirees living off their pension plan. They have 85,000 active workers trying to get to a pension plan.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years ago, they had an $11 billion surplus, extra money
mm-hmm.
in their retirement plan. They now have a $31 billion deficit underfunding in their retirement plan.
Hmm.
So, you know, stock market, and in this, it's a Forbes article that they go through this thing, and the guy basically talks about somebody did at one of the largest pension funds did a study, and they said if the stock market dropped by 10% or more and stayed down there for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, you'd start to see a lot of these pensions just explode because they wouldn't have enough money to meet their retirement obligations.
Mm.
All right. So, and the list goes on. You know, you can search. There are databases that you can search. What's the current funding liability of my pension? And it's not uncommon to see a billion, half a billion, 2 billion, 3 billion of underfunding. I've been, since I read this article, when I sit down with clients, I've been, you know, going on looking at the databases and seeing what the latest funding is. And it's quite frightening. So if I'm looking at my retirement income and I say, okay, I'm going to have my Social Security, I'm going to have my pension, and that's going to represent a core, you know, everyday part of my spending. Mm-hmm. How well is that thing funded? Hmm. And, you know, a couple of years ago, a big steel company reduced its pensions on hundreds and hundreds of thousands of active retirees, and they had, you know, significant reductions, right? So what you're focused on is, and you can start Google searching this, and you could see, you know, articles, you know, there's an article from September of last year in Reuters talking about New York Teamsters approved slashing benefits to retired members. And it says, monthly pensions for retired Teamsters from 9 New York local unions who have 30 years of service will be cut on average from $3,500 to $3,500 from $5,000, according to pension plan trusts. Mm. Members who are working would also have benefit cuts. So it's like, all right, I'm working, I'm collecting $5,000 a month in pension, and all of a sudden the check shows up and it's $3,500. What does that do?
Yeah.
All right. So the focus point is that, is your pension funded properly, and are the liabilities matching? There's a truth in accounting website that you can go to, and you can click on, and you can go to there. You can look at pensions, and you can look at things. And I live in New Jersey, so I just went to their pension, clicked New Jersey, looking at the 2016 results, and it shows the teacher's pension and annuity fund, public employees, retirement system, the police. It's about 15 different New Jersey things. And it says plan assets, $44 billion. Plan promised benefits, $163 billion. Unfunded benefits, $118 billion. Hmm. 27% funded. That's frightening. So my point is, it's a variable in your financial plan. And I kind of, people have heard me say this, and I say this over and over again. It's, you know, I'm on the greatest luxury liner ever built. I'm sailing off onto the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
It's unsinkable. Never going to happen. And a tail risk comes out, and it's called an iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
And what could not happen is happening. The ship is sinking. And we run up on deck, and we find out that there's not enough lifeboats.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we need lifeboats? We don't need lifeboats. It's unsinkable.
Mm-hmm.
And now there was enough people. And how many people actually died in that Titanic? Mm-hmm. You know? It was turned into a beautiful love story in the movie.
It was a pretty good love story in the movie. I agree. Well, how about
kind of distracted from what was really going on.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. That was a really nice pivot there. I appreciate that, John. So I have a suggestion. Why don't we have this become like a little podcast mini series? Because we are on the first of the seven, correct?
Correct.
Right. So that means
Social Security and pensions.
Okay. Good. So we've knocked out two. How about our next?
And withdrawal. Withdrawal rate, sort of.
Oh, you did talk about withdrawal. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that still means we have a lot to cover. So how about we let people off this podcast sucking their thumb and wondering what in God's name is going to happen. And then what we can do is we can readdress the other three on the next podcast. So it'll be a little two-part miniseries. And then that way we can continue to go to the depth that I think we need to with this topic like you have today. Does that sound fair?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Awesome. All right. Well, you know, when you talk about wealth under pressure, you have to take a really good look at the pressures. And just because you might not want it to be so, it doesn't mean that it's not. And working with somebody like John Smallwood is amazing because it gives you the opportunity to look at things in a different way and really look at things with that word, really, with reality, with the situations that's going on. And when you have somebody who is a student of the game, who's consistently reading and trying to find out exactly what's going on so that he can serve his clients in the way that they need to be served, that's what you're going to get when you're working with somebody like John. So, John, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Matt, and I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And if you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, this is a good one to subscribe to because you probably want to share this with people you know. When you do subscribe, it's super easy to share the podcast. All you have to do is click the share button and you can either share the link or you can type in a person's email address directly and get this podcast in their hands and in their ears so that they can learn what you learned today. So for everybody with John Smallwood, this is Matt Halloran and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Smallwood Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor. The opinions expressed by Smallwood Wealth Management and guests on the show are their own. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the receipt of or a substitute for personalized advice from Smallwood Wealth Management or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Smallwood Wealth Management is not a law firm or accounting firm, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.